This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. The Oscar-winning 1996 film Shine tells the story of the collapse and recovery of Australian pianist David Helfgott, who was driven to a nervous breakdown by his encounter with Sergei Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto. His imperious teacher at the conservatory would always refer to the piece as the Rock Three. Imagine Sir John Gielgud uttering that name, and you might gain a little understanding of the hold that this piece came to have over young Helfgott, as it has over so many pianists before and since. If it is not the most challenging concerto ever written, it is certainly one of them, although Rachmaninoff himself felt it was more comfortable than his second concerto, which is probably the more popular and the more hummable. Except for the introduction to the slow movement, the soloist in the Rock Three plays virtually non-stop, veering from powerful, thundering chords to delicate filigree in the space of just a few measures. For composers writing in the big, romantic bravura tradition, it was pretty standard fare to write a flashy solo part that was both powerful and lyrical. Rachmaninoff's feat in his third concerto was to challenge the pianist to be not just a virtuoso soloist, but an alert, flexible, responsive musician who knows how to blend, accompany, and listen. By October 1906, Rachmaninoff was already the successful composer of two piano concertos, three operas, chamber music, works for solo piano, and several dozen important songs. He was an admired conductor and recognized as one of the great pianists of his and any time. But like all composers who have busy careers as performers, Rachmaninoff found himself longing for time just to compose. He moved his family out of Russia, away from the social unrest that would soon become a revolution, to Dresden, Germany, for some peace and quiet. Even then, he couldn't keep himself entirely out of circulation, and eventually, in the spring of 1909, he accepted an invitation for his first tour of the United States. One of the stipulations of the tour was that he bring a new composition to play, so he returned to the familiar surroundings of his family's country estate in Russia to write what would become his third piano concerto. Unfortunately, composing the concerto took longer than he anticipated, and he had to bring along a silent keyboard so he could practice in his cabin on the long ocean voyage to America. He made his American debut at a recital at Smith College in Massachusetts in November of that year, went to Philadelphia to conduct the first U.S. performance of his Second Symphony, and a few weeks later introduced his new concerto with Walter Damrosch and the New York Symphony. 2 months later, he played it again with the New York Philharmonic, under Gustav Mahler, another conductor struggling for time to compose. Each of Rachmaninoff's works for piano and orchestra has a distinctive and arresting opening. In the first and fourth concertos, he's aggressive, even combative. The second emerges from the depths with a famous series of chords like the tolling of ancient bells. The Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini begins with an almost anti-romantic musical joke. But the first measures of the third concerto display a quality not usually associated with Rachmaninoff: simplicity. For two measures, clarinet, bassoon, horn, timpani, and muted strings set up a pulse against which the piano sings a long and quiet melody, two hands in unison, just a few notes, unfolding with subtle rhythmic variation. Only once, and with just one note, does the melody extend beyond the range of an octave. Most of it stays within the span of a fifth, which gives it a profound and unmistakably Russian character. Rachmaninoff told the musicologist Yosef Yasser that the theme had come to him ready-made and had, in effect, written itself, which could be explained by its close resemblance to an old Russian liturgical chant called "Thy Tomb, O Savior, Soldiers Guarding." If the melody seems simple, the accompaniment cost Rachmaninoff considerable thought and trouble. He wrote later that he was thinking of singing the melody on the piano as a singer would sing it, and finding a suitable orchestral accompaniment, or rather, one that would not muffle this singing, end quote. What he ended up with is pretty extraordinary. How the violins first anticipate, then echo the pianist's song, while the woodwinds either gently reinforce the bass or join the piano in a few notes of the melody. This conjunction of integration and contrast is what drives this concerto. For instance, Rachmaninoff first suggests the second theme as a kind of twitch in the winds behind the delicate piano passage work. Before a mini cadenza announces its formal arrival. When the second theme does appear, Rachmaninoff presents it in two different guises. First, as a dialogue of orchestra and piano, then as a lyric melody. The twists and turns lead to a thunderous climax. A gentle entrance by the winds, and then a spacious pause. Before the opening music appears again, leading to the cadenza. Rachmaninoff actually wrote two cadenzas, one with mostly big chords, the other with lighter passage work, but both leading to powerful climaxes. Once again, the winds signal a return to the opening melody. Passing it around from soloist to soloist, but it's not quite over. There's another mini cadenza. A preview of the slow movement leads to a quick recapitulation, and the final pages. Are full of fragments of earlier themes ghosting by as if in a dream. The Adagio's second movement is labeled intermezzo, which is a curious understatement for a movement this expansive. Winds, then strings, wind their way through modulations to keys both related and distant. The abrupt entrance of the piano. Pulls the music away to even more distant harmonic ground. This leads to a series of variations on the theme. Broken up by a light waltz. This waltz may be Rachmaninoff's memory of a similar interruption in the slow movement of Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto. The clarinet and bassoon melody of the waltz is a close cousin to the concerto's principal theme, and if you could slow down the piano's dizzying figurations, you'd find the opening melody in there, too. All these references prove that Intermezzo may have been an accurate title after all, as each episode builds to a series of explosive chords that introduce the finale, another whirlwind of virtuosity and invention. Just as in the opening, the second theme gets a double presentation, first in harmonic outline, with solidly packed piano chords against drumming strings, then as a passionate melody for the solo piano. Rachmaninoff then surprises us with a series of variations on what pretends to be a new idea, but is actually an ingenious combination of the first movement's second theme and the beginning of the finale. He begins to tie all these ideas together with an unobtrusive, slightly varied reappearance of the concerto's very first melody in the violas and cellos. The idea of repetition as instant variation has been part of the underlying structure of this piece since the very first appearance of that opening melody. Now, this idea has become one of Rachmaninoff's most important tools in integrating all the themes in this uncommonly large-scale work. The opening of the recapitulation leads to a false coda, which gives Rachmaninoff time to bring back more themes from earlier in the piece, including a couple of hints of the Dies Irae, the Gregorian chant for the dead, which was one of Rachmaninoff's favorite musical motifs. And all of it leads to a big romantic finish with Rachmaninoff's signature closing phrase. Despite Rachmaninoff's fondness for it and his own bravura performances, his Piano Concerto No. 3 didn't catch on with the general public until the 1930s, when the legendary Vladimir Horowitz made the piece his own. But by the 1990s, the Rock 3 was the piece on everyone's lips, if not under their fingers, and with its deceptively simple opening masking a series of ever-increasing challenges, it remains the ultimate test for the pianist as a complete musician. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.